come to the final full day together. I'd like to speak to you for a little while about the meditations, the mindfulness and the practices would be one area. A little bit on the theme again of reflection. A little bit about today's program. And anything else that might come to mind while I'm talking, we'll see. There is an encouragement for each and every one of us to develop an interest and an application with these five primary areas. I'm going to speak about the last one in a moment or two. And what is precious and important with these is that none of them really require any specific location nor any specific form there. We are not saying, oh, you should meditate every morning and evening at home. It's not in the language here, regardless what you may hear elsewhere. But what we are saying is that there is the richness and the fullness of the day and the variety of human experiences are worth addressing, obviously, looking at very, very carefully, noticing as early as possible that which deserves our attention. And in the fullness of the day, for some people, there is a regular rhythm and flow of the meditation in the morning and the evening, but here the emphasis is on the whole of the day. In the closing talk with you tomorrow morning, which will be probably for about 25 minutes or so, I will speak specifically on points to remember, and there are a range of them, with the daily life. And if you are meeting either Tina or myself with the interviews during the day, if you would kindly keep your areas of interest or questions or sharing to the immediacy of the experiences, because as I say, tomorrow morning in the closing period, I'll touch upon many of these points which people often bring or have coming to the last stage or period of the retreat. In the five areas that I have in mind, as just mentioned, periods of time of mindfulness of breathing, the small reminder of the benefit serving as some harmony to body and mind including feelings and emotions, the interruption of too much thinking, a contribution to the calmness of being, and there are plenty of opportunities in the rhythm of the day, both here and elsewhere, to really remind oneself, which is part of the feature of mindfulness, to breathe, to breathe, to breathe. And that itself, recollection and application, contributes to reduction of stress. And one of the key features, it helps us to notice things earlier, before they start to have more and more impact and become more and more stressful and distressing there. With the mindfulness of the body, there, this area of attention, and as Tina was reminding us yesterday evening, in so many words, that of the variety of features of the body, that this small little hole between the tip of the nose and the chin, what's in between the mouth, whoa, Is this a practice? Is this an exploration? And all the things which are kind of thrown at us, you know, with diet and food and the food industry and all the consequences of it all on ourselves, on creatures, on the environment, etc. It is a really major area. And if we had some, whatever, food wisdom and clarity in our society and the health and the benefits from this, we would not have had anywhere near as much a terrible tragedy globally with the COVID, because people's level of fitness and health and well-being is significantly affected by what goes in this hole. And that itself is a great major practice for all of us. It's an ongoing exploration there. It doesn't have to be discipline. It doesn't have to be should and must. It's interest and love and empathy and kindness will really give a nourishment to us. Getting the balance right with that, and the Buddha pointed this out, and it's a great point that is being made, that you refer to four primary areas of nourishment. We can get nourishment through what we see, what we hear, what we smell, of course, what we taste, and what we touch. If these other areas, these other four areas of the five senses, are being nourished through the wonder and the loveliness of the day, the beauty and the presence of beautiful people around us, and the small moments, that if there's nourishment is coming through that, it will take the pressure of this dreaded pilgrimage to the refrigerator at home, or to the shops to buy things which are slowly poisoning us, because we feel nourished. And when we feel undernourished in these areas, when we feel unloved or disconnected there, of course we want some sensation, and the sensation easily goes to the tongue. So this exploration of the senses is really important, and the nourishment which comes through precious memory, the nourishment which comes through love for the other, whoever she, he, creature, nature might be. Another area with regard to the nourishment that comes is the nourishment through our intention. And so sometimes you and I wish to offer something, we wish to do something beautiful, and we explore that, and there is a movement, there is an action there, and this nourishment also brings about that. And of course the nourishment which comes as well, so we have the senses, we have the intention and movement that comes, memory, the inner life, past, present, and future as well, and also that in life which is so nourishment can be in the expressions and in the forms of creativity, in the forms of an imagination which helps to make something apply and develop, and all of that brings nourishment to us, but it also brings nourishment to others. And if we really are quietly committed to these areas in our daily life, it will contribute to a much more balanced relationship to what we eat and what we drink, what we put in the mouth. Therefore, the expansion of the whole being. Remembering too, mindfulness, we heard a few times on this, in relationship to the physical life. And really noticing the vitality, the sensations, the vibrancy of the body, and where we just pick up some signals which might require some early attention, and therefore not neglected. We moved on to the feeling world, such a precious factor in human existence, and again the encouragement for you with that. And today, there's still some kind of clouds are high. I just asked Manuela to have a look at her good mobile and check out what the weather situation is during today. Seems like all in the hands of the gods, but it seems like it will be dry. So if so, then at 2:30 today, if you wish to come, there'll be a meeting at 2:30 p.m. So if the bell ringer kindly rings the bell, indoors, outdoors, 2:25 or so, we'll meet outside the front door, form a circle. I'll speak to you for 2 or 3 minutes, and then we will make a silent walk, single file, along the path through the forest. Collectively, we'll cross the road together, up through to the forest towards the lake. We may not reach the lake, we might get a view, so please have no expectations. And we'll do some standing for 5 minutes or so, and then we'll turn around and we'll walk back, and it's a short pilgrimage in that direction, of course, but the monastery, many have made the pilgrimage here over many, many centuries, in fact, and it will be an hour-long period from the moment we start to the moment we get back, so around 2:30, and that will also, of course, give you time, have a cup of tea or whatever, and then the afternoon talk, as the usual time of 4 o'clock. So you're very well invited to come and join them. It's quite a... And if it's raining, it's cancelled. So you get the point. All right. There. So then there's the feeling world. And just, again, as a mindfulness practice, those three areas of feeling I spoke to you about, pleasant in between and the unpleasant, just genuinely worthwhile check in, just what's the feeling right now? And there's a subtlety to that before it's got any content to it, before it's got any memory or any story or any reason for it, just the very bareness of it. And the touch with that will keep us close to that. And as already pointed out, particularly those of you who are in work where you need to use the good skills and knowledge and expertise of your mind, it will be a regular reminder at work or in your studies that feeling life must not be neglected. It's a heavy-duty price for its neglect. And if it is neglected, do not take the feeling life for granted. It's not to be taken for granted. You can dry up. You can become cold, distant, disconnected, unfriendly to yourself, to others. Feeling life is drying up. And for others, the absence of the integration is lending itself to an immense feeling emotional pressure. So there's a controlling of the feelings going on in the workplace or any other environment, and that is building up a pressure. That pressure will break through. It will generate unhappiness. It will generate a lot of turmoil inside, certainly a lot of tears and emotion, burnout, exhaustion, feeling that one's life is just doesn't have well-being, doesn't have integration in it. Sound reasons and for the experience of, it's not a theory, it's a practice. And just connecting with what we feel. To really notice that because they do have such an influence on the rest of our life. Either neglected, or repressed, or ignored. And if we keep just connected, quiet ways, something touches you during the day, you feel that warm connection with another, the birds on the wing, precious meditation, whatever it might be. Feel that there. You may have some concerns and issues about global issues or work issues or whatever. Family issues, just feel that. Just be with the feeling, give it greater significance than what it's about. And all of these things will really support us in a well-adjusted, well-integrated life, because we know ourselves, we know what we feel, we're in touch with them, and we can respond appropriately. We enter the states of mind there, mind with anger, without greed, without fear, without etc. And all of that absence of and recognition and importance, when it's the absence of the issue, the absence of the confusion or whatever, knowing the absence of is as valuable and as important as knowing the presence of. And when in the presence of love and empathy and dedication, really to know the presence of, and with our imagination, you know when it's authentic and valid, this is important, when it's authentic and valid and worthwhile, it has a value to it, it has an ethic to it, and equally important, it has an action. The action shows that our creative imagination, such a precious attribute in life, we know it's not a fantasy because we respond to it. Something comes out of it. If nothing comes out of it, it's just a good idea. Oh yeah. But it's got no power. It's just sitting in the meditation room or walking up and down with lovely ideas, saving the world, saving all sentient beings, saving oneself from oneself, or whatever it might be. But it doesn't have us any steps. So we know the difference between a creative imagination or a vision through our response to it. And the same equally applies with insights, with understanding there. Sometimes people will come say, in the one-to-ones, you can imagine how many times I've heard this one, Christopher, I've had the most amazing insight during the last walking meditation. It's changed my life. Oh, here we go, etc. And it's lovely to hear. And sometimes we imagine, and this is in its deceptive mode, Buddhist world to say, Mara has come to visit. Mara is that which is false, that which is misleading, so it gets personalized as Mara. It literally means temptation. So Mara has come to visit her. So I've had this incredible experience. It just, Christopher, it blew my mind, etc. This is a history of somebody who likes smoking, usually. And there's some movement that goes on there. The strength and the intensity of the sensation is no confirmation of an insight. It's no confirmation of it. We can be persuaded, it can be, it's not that it can't be, but it can be. But it is not in itself a confirmation. The confirmation of an insight is actually, it has some beneficial, significant change, either for ourselves or somebody else. Then we know, oh, this is authentic. That the world of sensations, as mentioned to you, and feelings, and remember, Camus with his tremendous insights in The Outsider, can be extremely false. The sensation can be very, very deceiving there. So and sometimes you and I, during our days, let's say here and anywhere else, obviously, something arises which was a kind of sensationless thought. Something just arose in the mind, tiny, and barely noticed it. No drama, no rush of emotion, no alleluia in the forest, just sweet or not sweet thought just arose, hardly noticed. And sometimes, hours, days, weeks, months, years later, that single, hardly noticed event, one realizes that single quiet, no sensation thought was a major turning point in one's life. Something happened. And sometimes we don't even have that. And the example I've given and given before, in California, first I did lots of retreats, Christopher with wonderful, precious teachers on the West Coast there. And she said to me, Christopher, I've done lots of retreats. I haven't had any insights there. I don't know why I've come. I think it's a miracle if I can be mindful of two consecutive breaths. And all of that. Lots of people can relate very well to this there. And she said, also, I've never taken any risks in my life. She said, I live a very, very quiet life. I just stay in my little circle. I've never been overseas. I've never done anything exciting. I just live, good lady, probably maybe 50 years of age. I've never done anything, Christopher. I just live a very quiet life and I do my annual retreat, etc. And she said, you know, Christopher, what happened to me? She said, I went alone to China for a month. She said, and I know somehow the meditation, I don't know the relationship, got me to China. I didn't have any insights, didn't have any, I've got to open up my life, I've got to change my life, I've got to go overseas. Somehow there is some connection, she says, I have no idea what, between these meditation retreats and me having the most fabulous time in China. And she says, I'm ready to see the world. Sometimes we just don't know the influences going on in the deep, which consciousness doesn't know, it doesn't pick up on. And something's going on, and something emerges. And we just know there's some connection. I haven't got what it is, but it's opened up my life. We're interested in that. We're not here to say, I know myself. Oh, that's terribly conceited. We're here to be receptive. We're here to acknowledge in the universe within is as deep and profound as the universe outside. And things move and move us there. So sometimes, just coming to the end of the day, just a little story here. So at the end of the day, as you know, you've heard me now, night after night, time is 9:30. It's the evening time for the hot drink. Blah, blah, blah. So, some years ago, one of the good women on the retreat, he said, Christopher, I've done lots of retreats with you. In here in Waldhausen, other parts of Germany, overseas. He said, you always say exactly the same thing. Word for word. Some of you know this already. Word for word. Can't you say something different? Like that. And so my response to this was, to be honest, I can't be bothered. And then I said, look, I know people come here and they're very dedicated and committed and they want a really deep and profound experiencing of awakening, but they don't want it at 9:30 p.m. at night, like that there. So my contribution to this, 9:30, hot drink time, start of the days at 6 a.m., all this slow, etc. It's a contribution to sleepening, you see. So there, and so some people just say this, it makes people feel possibly even more sleepy than they might be anyway. And some of you still got some energy and off you go to have your hot evening drink. And you think, gosh, those others who are left in here, God, they're hardcore militant yogis still practicing after 9:30. They're not. They're asleep. They're exhausted. And if you ever look around, there, some of you, going out on your hands and knees, you're so tired. Oh, thank God the day is over. Yeah. One person wondered if they could have a lift. This is the lift. The doors are now closing. You are going up to the next floor. Have a good sleep. See you tomorrow. Whatever. All right. Yeah. So it all these rhythms and the energies that go on with us, as mentioned through all this, just being mindful of the energies there and quiet energy. One person came to me, she practices yoga a great deal. She sat in front. She said, Christopher, my Kundalini energy is rising to the max. All seven chakras are spinning furiously. Wow. Whoa, whoa, whoa. All right, well, thank you very much. And the interview is over now, and enjoy. Oh dear, it's lovely to listen to the good voices. It's genuinely a privilege. Earlier. So then we say the state of mind with that, then this finally, equally as important as all the others, is a meditations without a form. That means not concerned with the object, called the breath, it's called the body, it's called the feeling, it's called the state of mind. So there is the awareness or consciousness or seeing, whatever language, mindfulness, whatever. And the mindfulness gives attention to the object. That which we can observe, which we can see clearly, we can describe, that which we can observe. Just remember Buddha's great statement, that which we can observe is not me, is not myself, is not who I am. This is the body, this is the breath, this is the feelings, this is the state of mind. That which is observed there. And therefore we abide and we stay receptive. And with that, in an open and expansive awareness, the awareness or the meditation comes off the object. Objects will appear. You know, sounds will come, body sensations will come, thoughts will come, feelings will come, etc. And sometimes, maybe little, it might just feel very spacious and very open there. And it's a rather choiceless meditation, a choiceless awareness in which there is no specific interest in a particular object. They'll come, of course, they'll come there. So we just kind of find the posture, sit, walk, stand, and recline. And we're just quietly open receptive and steady in a very expansive way. And later on, I'll offer a guided meditation on this. And that genuinely is really another expression of a precious human experience. And if we can remember that, both sitting postures, other postures, if you're outdoors, and just to feel the formless. What's formless? Silence doesn't have a form. Stillness doesn't have a form. Space, spaciousness, doesn't have a form. Sometimes the heart is expanded with love. Doesn't require an object. We just experience the expanse. And that expanse, the consciousness is bright, and consciousness has love with it. A kindness or receptivity of the warmth of the being, and that's there as well.
Can I ask?
Of course, yes, I do it.
I had something I called focus wandering.
Focus
wandering rather than mind wandering. So when I tried to have an awareness for everything, my focus was wandering automatically to pain, to the wind, like.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and I felt like I'm not focused because it was happening automatically.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So it would indicate there, and it's a very common response there. So very easily, as we just heard, in not having the object, like I mentioned to you, it's probable for some initially that there's still movements going on, and the sense is, wow, the tendency in the mind is still operating, as we've heard, automatically, so to speak, in which, whoa, one goes to sensations in the body, like it goes to a pain, goes to a thought, goes to a sound, and it has the sense of just moving rather quickly from one thing, one object to another. That's just indicating currently that there's enough movement of the mind to push the consciousness hither and thither, here and there. One has to be patient with it. And thank you, really important point you've made there. Despite that, to be patient, not to go straight back to the object, primary object, because one knows what to focus on and center upon, just be with that expanse, just knowing, as we heard, jumping from one thing to another very, very quickly, staying with it, and in the staying with it, a key to this, another formless factor, is the stillness of the posture. Even in walking, there can be a precious sense of stillness. And with the stillness, that can be very, very subtle. And the combination of the stillness, the expanse, the silence of the being there, it may only need to go just a little bit deeper. And it's out of the range of the automatic. It just needs to go a little bit deeper. And then the consciousness is not just landing on. There is a sense of openness and it's coming. So it's not being rejected, or it's just being received, not being pushed onto. And that depth has a preciousness to it. That can go remarkably deep, and then we are receptive as well to that which can come through and touch us. And it's got no history to it. It's got no habit to it. It's got no tendency. There's nothing automatic about it. So we have our benefits of our, you might say, left hand, of the form, as described, and the exploration of the formless. let's have a sitting together. Zoe, thank you for listening.